go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Time, no question about it. Lots happening. Play-in in the NBA final night, regular season-wise in the NHL. Playoffs begin officially in both the association and on ice beginning on Friday, right? Yes, that much we do know. Actually, be over the weekend. Today is, what, the 17th, 18, 19. Yeah, so it officially begin on Saturday. But, you know, the two-month jaunt for both. And, you know, here we are all of a sudden in a world where people defend titles, right? Scottie Scheffler became only the second player to ever win the Players as well as the Masters in the same year, joining Tiger Woods. We know back when Tiger would win a couple of these in a row. Certainly in Augusta, he would win a few in a row. Scottie Scheffler has had that success too, winning, what, two out of his last three. Able to do that on Sunday, and the Chiefs just doubled up. UConn doubled up. You go back to, what, maybe 4 years ago when the Lightning were on the receiving end of two consecutive years in which they actually did win the Stanley Cup. I've always been a big fan of that. I love dynasties. I love teams that can stay together year after year after year, and to me, that's what it's all about. Too much maneuvering going on today. Players coming and going, coaches coming and going. I think it's a lot harder on the fans, but this is an interesting time of year. Home field advantage has always been so important, regardless of the sport, but we're starting to see that wane as well. All you have to do is go back to that Houston, Texas American League Championship Series last year. Which was absolutely phenomenal, right? What, all seven games, the home team was the loser. You talk all year here about it with the Jaguars, about how important it is to, you know, try to get those home games in the sun when it's going to be 95, 100 degrees. We know what happened here last September. Jackson was really embarrassed, okay? And certainly that game against Houston. So all of that talk of the home field went away. We just saw Patrick Mahomes for the first time in his career having to win road playoff games. He had never been in that situation. So whether it's baseball with a couple of days off and, you know, the bye within the first round, hockey's always been the exception to the rule. And I think those that are close to the NHL and have any type of understanding for these players, they've always been wired differently. So I guess it makes a little bit of sense when you'll hear hockey players say, yeah, it's actually more beneficial to get out, to get on the road, get away from playing in our own barn, whether it's ticket requests or I don't know what the responsibilities could be and how much more aggravating it is to actually play at home as it would be on the road, because obviously on the court or on the field or on the diamond, it's always about generating that home field. I wonder, is it as important now as it used to be? Statistically, I don't have any data to back it up, but it's pretty obvious that the home field isn't what it once was. However, that'll be important for many in the next couple of months. Going to be really exciting. I think it's wide open this year in the NHL. I think the NBA, a little bit more set now on about three or four teams, and that all depends on whether or not guys can stay healthy. Hockey is a sport that even when they do get injured, they still play. I mean, you practically have to break a bone, and even when you break a bone, they play. You absolutely have to be just not able to give it a go at all if you're going to sit out in the NHL playoffs. All right, so enough of that. It's just a really good time of year. There's no question about it. We're also going to get to a lot of college football tonight. I have updates on Florida State, Florida, in Miami, a lot of quarterback news from all three of those schools, okay? Some really interesting stuff coming out of the U I want to get into. Florida, of course, they've wrapped everything up. Zach Goodall is going to join us in about 1 hour. Zach's actually making the trip back over here from Gainesville to Jacksonville. He's got a brand new gig. At one point in his career, he did cover the Jaguars before swatting on over to cover the Gators. He's coming back home, so we'll talk to him about his newest job. But certainly, I do want to pick Zach's brain on what he witnessed and what his belief was throughout spring ball. You just heard from Billy Napier, and one of the major stories is about calling plays. And that's what happens when you struggle. We've dealt with that in this city. Trevor Lawrence spoke about that yesterday. You know, Press Taylor calling plays, Doug Peterson calling plays. When are they going to make that announcement? You know, you want to be comfortable with what's going on in the surrounding area, but you also have to make the right calls. I thought a year ago, way too conservative. And, you know, the biggest problem that Jacksonville had, in my opinion, is that they could not run the ball. And you know all the numbers, 25% of the carries that Jacksonville made a year ago, they were defended at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. That just has to change if you are going to be able to get back into where you are a playoff contending football team. All right, this is a big night. I love this because it's really, you know, the eve of getting to talk with Trent Baalke and getting to talk with Doug Peterson. Now, I've been pretty consistent about this for their last several conversations. They've been pretty outward. They've been pretty informative, okay? And I'm not going to go through all of the examples, but so many of these conversations that you get are called canned conversations, just a lot of lip service, just kind of giving you, you know, what you're asking, just give you a little taste so you in return as a member of the media can translate that back to Jaguar fans, right? That's why we're there. Find out what the players are thinking, find out what the coaches are thinking, so you, as the Jaguar fans, have an understanding as to what is going on coming up 1 week from tomorrow night. Unfortunately, as we sit here a week and a day away, I'm still under the belief they go corner. Okay, that's where I believe they are going to select. I would not draft at that position. I would upgrade the offense, and I would go one of two ways. Even though they are walking back that offensive line and they added Mitch Morris, I still have no problem with this football team at number 17 grabbing the best offensive lineman on their board. To me, it makes total complete sense. Having a pretty good let's say vibe as to what is going to happen. I don't expect that. I don't. I think it's one of two things. They either get the wide receiver or they get the corner. I think it's a pretty split as far as, you know, what you believe they should do. But last year at this time, what were you talking? You know, I was yelling about the offensive line. And people were saying, no, you need a pass rusher. You need to go out and get yourself another edge rusher. And then, of course, on the eve of the draft, the Cam Robinson news came out. So for those who didn't think that Jacksonville was legitimately going to get an offensive lineman in the first round, and that only came into play because of the suspension, all right, we'll never really know the answer to that, right? I'm sure Trent Baalke knows, and Doug Peterson, a few others know, if in fact they stayed true to the board. But yeah, with the Cam suspension, all of a sudden that became a desperate need for the football team. They did some nice things here in the offseason. And what really becomes interesting for me is the conversations about Trent Baalke, who always seems to trade out, right? And, you know, he's moved down for the most part. He's also moved up in his career, both in San Francisco as well as in Jacksonville. But are you going to get a big splash move that actually does happen here? And you keep hearing about you keep hearing about Brandon Ayuk, and you keep hearing about T. Higgins or making a move along those lines. Here's what you got to ask yourself. What's it going to cost, and what are you willing to give up to get a player of that caliber? Now, I've been hollering forever about a big-bodied wide receiver, a big-bodied, fast wide receiver. That's not Brandon Ayuk, okay? He's 6 foot. And he runs a 4.5, but he's also very explosive. He's one of those guys that I think, if you didn't know his 40, and you were to guess it with pads on, he looks faster, football fast, if you will. But he's not the prototypical, you know, 4 foot or, you know, 4.32 40 or a 4.33 40 who's 6'3, 6'3 and a half, 6'4. And I think that's what a lot of you out there would love to see. I absolutely would, right? Outside of the offensive line, to me, that's the biggest deal. Finally get Trevor Lawrence where he can throw to a big-bodied wide receiver. We haven't seen that. And I would love for that to be able to come in. But what's it going to cost? And not only do you make a trade to bring in Brandon Ayuk, and for what it's worth, I mean, Jacksonville's ranked like seventh as far as the odds. They're a 14-1. This is all about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're basically 2-1 right now. It just feels like that is where he is going to end up getting moved to. And again, you got to believe if it does happen, it's going to happen anytime up until next week's first round, right? Which is obviously coming up in 8 days. But, you know, where would you value this? Where would you put things in order? Are you going to give up a second and a fifth, very similar to what we saw the Giants do for a guy like Brian Burns? Brian Burns is a nice player. Brian Burns can get to the quarterback. Brian Burns is a three-down football player, okay? And the cost, a second and a fifth, not enormous. What did cost was redoing his contract. So that's the other part of the equation. Yes, you're going to have to give up draft capital, and it may cost you. I'll ask you straight up, are you giving up the 17th pick in the first round to get Brandon Ayuk? I am not. And I'm not for the reason that I identified. He's a very good wide receiver. He's a number one in the NFL, but he's not what they necessarily, I don't want to say he's not what they need. They need something besides that, if that makes any sense. If I'm saying that correctly, they need a big-bodied wide receiver, or at least that's what I would like to see them add. And this is a real interesting draft class, both at 17 and at 48, where the thinking has been, with all the guests we've had on, if that is really what they covet, they should be able to get a wide receiver with one of those two picks. So would you give up your second-round pick? Would you give up your fifth-round pick? And what's it going to cost? I mean, what are you going to have to give Ayuk, what, a 4-year deal, a 5-year deal? How much of that is guaranteed? How much of that would you be willing to risk for a guy that has been incredibly productive? That's the difference. All of these guys you could get at 17, all the wide receivers we've talked about, we don't know. Every year, players miss. Every year, teams miss. And they miss significantly with first-round guys. So you know what you get with a T. Higgins. You know what you get with a Brandon Ayuk. You do not know what you're going to get when you go out and draft a guy, even though the projection could be even better. That's the risk of the draft. I think I'd be surprised if Bulky was able to pull that off. And I'm just going to say for our conversation, you know, a second-round pick, maybe a fifth-round pick. Your thoughts on that? 641-1010 on the text line. Brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. I think it's too expensive to give up that number one pick. Okay, you may disagree. Again, same way to get us. Text line 641-1010. Brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. So will we get anything tomorrow? I mean, I highly doubt he's going to be like, yeah, you know, that's a great idea. I think we're going to do everything we can to trade for Brandon Ayuk. He wouldn't comment on him anyway because he is technically still under contract with another team. I remember asking Jack Del Rio about that, you know, 20 years ago. Asking him about Randy Moss and something that was up. It was a whole bunch of rumors, if you remember that particular story. And Jack was like, I'm not going to talk about Randy Moss. He's still under contract for another team. So it's very rare if you actually do get something from that magnitude. But I think it'll be at least a newsworthy day. And frankly, I'm excited about it. Getting a chance over there to just get some sort of a feel. To me, this has always been one of the most enjoyable times of the year is trying to figure out what are they going to do. And, you know, there's been tomfoolery. I say the story often, but the year that Jalen was selected, they did the interview with Jalen Ramsey and his family. They actually did it in the Jaguars locker room. Okay, it wasn't in a press setting. It was in the Jags locker room. And, you know, we were asking Jalen questions, and we were asking Dave Caldwell questions. And then after the setting, as the media was filing out, I remember Dan Hicken and I cornered Dave Caldwell. And this is when I was working afternoons with Frank and Jessica Blaylock. And I remember coming back saying, there's no way they're drafting Miles Jack. I just talked with Dave Caldwell, and the way he raised his eyebrows and we talked about his injury, I was convinced, no way. They're not going anywhere near this young man. And sure enough, we saw what happened. So, and I'm not saying that was a placed story or a planted story. You're allowed to, I mean, listen, grown men lie every day. This is like acceptable lying. This is gamesmanship. This is where, all right, we may give you a little something, and we hope that it gets talked about and it gets picked up and it makes its way through the NFL or at least the AFC South. I don't know. The other side of it could be, hey, they're just going to give us the very, very basics, and I'll get in here tomorrow night and we'll not be as expected. I'm going to take the former over the latter. I do. I think we'll find that it'll be pretty interesting as to what we are going to be able to get in place with the Jaguars 1 week away from the draft. Again, if you're joining us for the first time tomorrow, Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson will meet with us coming up at 2 o'clock. One other issue, whether it would be to trade for Brandon Ayuk, to make a deal for T. Higgins, or whatever else it could be, you start to look at re-signing your own players, right? And they did it with Josh Allen. Next up is Trevor Lawrence. Then it's Tyson Campbell. Then it's Andre Sisco. Well, Trevor yesterday was asked an awful lot about what is going on during the offseason. Where is he health-wise? Where is he as far as the mental side of things? And he was asked about the contract extension. For those of you who have forgotten, Jacksonville has until May 2nd. All right? That is the final day that the team can tender a fifth year for former first-round draft picks. So Travis Etienne is a part of this as well. Today's what? April 17th. They have until May 2nd. Obviously, they're going to pick it up, right? $25.6 million is what the fifth-year option will be for Trevor Lawrence. If they didn't pick it up and slap the franchise tag on him, you're talking about something in the mid-30s. So, you know, you're saving $9 to $10 million, maybe more, by placing the fifth-year option on him. So, yes, it's going to happen. There's just no need to make that announcement today. Trent Baalke knows the deadline coming up on May 2nd. But, you know, it's been tossed around a little bit about an extension for Trevor. And, you know, I'll be as honest as I always am. My confidence has dropped in a year. All right? And it's not all on him, but it's dropped. He had five injuries. He made countless stupid plays, mental plays. And I know every time you say, well, Brett Favre used to make mental plays. Well, Jameis went, well, okay. One of them was one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. He was reckless, though, right? He was fearless. There were also times that Lord Favre was stupid. Jameis made all those mistakes at Florida State. He was just such a gamer and such a come-from-behind quarterback that he was able to win all of those games. Those same mistakes caught him in Tampa, right? And he's been a backup in New Orleans. Jameis has never really been able to take that next step because he makes a lot of physical mistakes. He makes a lot of mental mistakes. Trevor Lawrence made way too many mental mistakes last year. Way too many. And on top of that, the fact that they can't run the ball and we're still trying to figure out what that wide receiver rotation is going to be like along with calling plays. No, not even close would I consider signing Trevor Lawrence right now. Although I get if you were to get a deal done now, the back end of it is going to be cheaper. 4 years, 5 years down the road. But where's your confidence in this? Again, if this was April 17th, 2023, if we were to go back and rewind those tapes, I'm sitting here saying, sign him as soon as he's eligible. Sign him. I'm still not 100% sold on this. I want to say yeah. It is going to be so easy for guys like me and for fans like you if Trevor really does put it all together and have a huge year. And all of a sudden, he wants to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, not named Patrick Mahomes. You're going to get the ton of, oh, well, why didn't they sign him when they had the money? Why didn't they do it, you know, in April and May of 2023? Why didn't get the deal done then? Well, you know, I guess you can. I'll never tell a fan they can't have it both ways. You can have it any way you want it, okay? That's you. But in my position, you got to pick it. And my pick is this. Pick up the fifth-year option and don't do anything. I mean, don't do it. There's no reason to pay him right now. Redo a couple of these other deals. Try to make some sort of a possibly a run for one of these. And there could be many other players available in this year's draft that, frankly, we haven't talked about, who could be dangled for teams that are trying to maneuver and free up some money. So I'm just thinking there's an opportunity, possibly, that the Jaguars are involved in a trade coming up 1 week from tomorrow. All right, let's get to Trevor on this. He talked about how things have gone with the Jaguars and their discussions about a contract extension.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some conversations. You know, as far as where that's at now, it's not really my focus. You know, I'd love to obviously be a Jag. So for as long as possible, we love it here. And I love where we're headed as an organization and feel like I'm just getting better every year. And my best ball is definitely ahead of me. So from that standpoint, obviously, yeah, that would be great. But like you said, it's going into my fourth year. It's not like this is necessarily going to be my last season. You know, there's a lot that could happen. So not really my focus right now.
He says all the right things, and it appears genuine. He's a pretty good dude. He really is. I mean, I don't think he's one of those that would hold this city hostage. Imagine that, just for 30 seconds. Imagine if you had a guy in town here who was your future, was your quarterback, and the results of three seasons have been underwhelming, right? Not the best word to describe. If I was to say, give me a word to describe Trevor Lawrence, you know, one word, two words, what are you going to give me? It's going to be somewhere right there with underwhelming, isn't it? Again, not all his fault, but it hasn't gone the way yet that many of us felt it would. The risk factor is enormous in signing this guy to a long-term contract extension. So absolutely, let him play it out. But, again, you may be on the other side where you say, uh-uh, get it done. This man's going to take that next step, and it will be cheaper to do it now as opposed to in a year or in 2 years. So if you want to comment on that, as always, the best way to get us is on the text line that is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010. Saw the Pink Floyd tribute show last night. I'm still coughing a little bit over here, JJ. Does the voice sound maybe deeper, a little rough? Any of that?
Yeah, I could see that you went to a show. It's not terrible.
Yeah, it was fun. But somehow the voice went on me in the early hours of the morning. I tell you what didn't go on me, though. That was my eyes. And that's because of the good folks at Schmunez Vision. Had really good seats at the Florida Theater, but if I did not, and I was pushed way back in that historic building, I still would have been okay. Why? I take visits all the time, a couple of times, as a matter of fact, two or three times a year with the good folks over at Schmunez Vision. They're a family organization. They focus on personal, high-quality medical and surgical eye care. All right, more than 30 years experience in laser eye surgery. You saw the guys at the Masters on Friday with the sand whipping out of those bunkers. If you're a golfer and you've ever experienced that, that's not fun. And if you're a contact lenses wearer, whoa, can you imagine what it would have been like in that situation? Well, if you have laser eye surgery, you never have to worry about your contacts again. Never have to worry about your glasses again. The rest of your days, you're seeing 20/20. Check them out online. Go to Schmunez Vision. That is Schmunez Vision. Care you can see. All right, we got a ton to do. It's great to be back right here on this Wednesday. again, I think it's a really exciting week. Looking forward to hearing from you tonight on a couple of those scenarios I just threw out to you at 641-1010 on the text line. You can respond to that. We got some college football coming up in a little bit. I got an update as well from the Masters. So we really got a lot of good things to do tonight, a lot of different subjects, and certainly we're going to get things started right here on a Wednesday of Wednesday edition of Into the Night.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, some college football coming up here in a little bit. Going to have a report on the Big Three, latest on the U, FSU, and the Gators. A lot of quarterback news for all three schools. And it's not great quarterback news. Certainly, it's probably best right now for the Gators. And we're going to talk with Zach Goodall coming up at 7:05. Florida State, you know, their two backup quarterbacks done for the year. Minor ailment on both, but they were not specific as to what's going on with Brock Glenn and Luke Kramenhock. But, you know, with the spring game coming up this weekend, they've shut it down. Apparently Cam Ward not happy with Mario Cristobal and his coaching staff because they keep bringing up his 12 fumbles a year ago at Washington State. You hear that story over there, JJ?
No.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting. And Ja'Kari Brown's leaving. Ja'Kari Brown, I guess, really not a surprise.
He sucks.
I still liked him, man. I did. Yeah, you were never a fan.
He's terrible. Yeah. He was the four-string quarterback.
Not sure where he's going, but he's on his way out. So that announcement there. And then, of course, with the Gators, I guess it was a really good wrap-up with their spring game with DJ Lagway. So we'll get into that again. Zach Goodall, who's actually leaving Gainesville, will be heading on his way back over here to cover the Jaguars. So we'll get the very latest from him. Looking forward to that as well. Today I spent a little bit of time looking at some of these draft bets because – as I've said forever, I'm out of the betting game. I think there'll be a time when they'll suck me back in. Okay, I'm just waiting for the right time. I don't have the itch. I don't have a desire. But there's a few things that intrigue me more than others. And being able to bet on the NFL draft in itself is really pretty incredible because I think there's opportunities here to make some money. And the one that I look at more than any is total quarterbacks drafted in the first round, right? It's 4.5, and it's going to cost you $1.80 to win 100, so it's certainly leaning towards the over. And there's no doubt that, you know, the first four picks could all be quarterbacks, or in the first four or five selections, you could have four quarterbacks with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. We all expect them to be off the board very early on Thursday. And then you got to ask yourself, will Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. fall into the first round? Is a team going to panic, as they so often do come draft time, when it's about selecting a quarterback? When push comes to shove, does a team move up? I was looking at, you know, the latest combination draft with Mel Kiper and with I think it was Yates, okay, at ESPN, who put it together, Field Yates, and they had quarterbacks, both Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., going early in the second round. They think it's going to be four. If I was forced to play this, I would play over the 4.5. I think a fifth quarterback goes in the first round. You have an opinion on this, JJ?
I don't.
Okay.
I mean, I guess.
You'd leave it alone.
Yeah, I would never bet on anything with the draft.
Never?
No.
Okay. I think I would. I think I would. I don't know why.
I bet on something that I think I have, like, information on. You know, I feel like I know this team can beat this team or this player can do this. To just, like, have to act like you know what a team or a GM is going to do, not for me.
Okay. I just love the way that they think because it's so accurate. I mean, 4.5 is the right number. And then, you know, Brian Thomas. We've talked an awful lot about him, right? 6'3",
or 6 foot two and a half, ran a 4.33. He's a big body guy who can run. Bam, right there, 16 and a half. If Jacksonville's on the board at 17, are they drafting a wide receiver? Are they not drafting the wide receiver? So, yeah, and that's another one. Some of these do get a little bit foolish. But, you know, I kind of have a decent feel about conferences. Will the ACC have 4.5 players selected in the first round? To me, that sounds like that would be down, okay? And even though you know that Drake's going to go, and I would assume that Jared Verse is going to go. Anyway, I just thought it was pretty cool. One other note with this that does involve this football team. Directly, when it got to the Jacksonville Jaguars, again, you can bet on positions. And this shouldn't be as a surprise because we've talked about it night and night, you know, night after night after night. But the Jaguars' first selection is going to be a corner, right? It's minus 140. You lay up $140, you win 100. Makes total sense. Next up is a wide receiver at 220. So that actually is not bad value if you wanted to risk things a little bit, $100 to bring back to 220. After that, the odds get much bigger, but we're talking about edge or D-line at plus 450, offensive line at plus 475, and then a safety at plus 5,000. So very little risk, a pretty large reward there for Jaguar wide receivers. Hey, for what it's worth, in this draft that they just went through, I thought it was interesting position-wise. I love what they did, okay? They did draft. This is the combination of Field, Yates, and Mel Kiper. They did a three-round draft selection. They have Jacksonville taking the wide receiver, Brian Thomas Jr., first round, 17th pick, okay? Then they go to Western Michigan for a defensive lineman by the name of Marshawn Nealand, who I know absolutely zip about, okay? Played his college football at Western Michigan, but obviously they could use some beef inside that interior defensive line. And then getting an offensive tackle out of Texas in the third round, and Christian Jones, yeah, there's a lot to really like there. Wide receiver, defensive line, tackle, the obvious missing position is cornerback, but this is the way things did work out for them with their mock draft that they actually put together yesterday. And hey, we'll have a little bit of fun tomorrow when we get an opportunity to talk with Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson as far as that. Of course, that'll be really the premise of tomorrow, the entire day, and certainly on our show coming up tomorrow night. All right, tonight's show brought to you by Patriot Roofing Services, specializing in all types of commercial and residential roofing and repairs. Give my buddy Mark Tozzolo a call. 982-4052, better yet, you can just check them out online. Patriot Roofing. This includes gutters, sun tubes, skylights. If you need a new roof, they got you covered at Patriot Roofing. If you need repairs to your current roof, they've got you covered at Patriot Roofing. This includes all businesses and your home. Again, just check them out. Go to Patriot Roofing Services. All right, take our final break this hour. Coming up at 7:05, Zach Goodall, the latest on the Gators and what he saw during spring ball, and obviously that concluded with their spring game this past weekend. Also, we'll go through a couple of nuggets with both Florida State and Miami a little bit later on. Right now, for the most part, on the Jags, if you want to jump on in, getting a lot of good stuff on the text line. If you want to jump in on that, you can as well. 641-1010 is the number, and as always, it's brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Masters coverage down 20% from a year ago, 9.59 million watched it, which is what, about 10 million less than who watched the college basketball women's finals. Everything there with Caitlin Clark. And, you know, I got to say this. It happened because of Amen Corner, but, you know, that's where Morikawa and Oberg and others, they just were victimized by the 11th, 12th, and 13th hole. You can really make the case that the last 90 minutes was maybe the boringest part of this year's golf tournament. I thought Thursday, and especially Friday with the winds, was very entertaining. Saturday on moving day was somewhat captivating, but even though at one point he only had a one-stroke lead before Amen Corner, did it ever really feel like that tournament was in doubt? And listen, I love watching the young man play, but he's not the most overly enthusiastic type of golfer. And, for passionate golfers, that doesn't matter. But I think it does for the casual ones. You know, you want a little bit more of a personality. You know, one other reason for the major drop-off ratings-wise was last year's Masters was on Easter. So when you had the families in and, you know, many more eyeballs in front of a television set, where this year's event, not on Easter. Apparently that is a pretty big difference maker when it comes to the percentage of folks who watched it and with the ratings. All right, 641-1010, a lot of good stuff coming in on Brandon Ayuk as well. To perhaps make a move for T. Higgins. 5774 says, "Bully, this year's third and next year's first to get him." Man, that's pricey. That really is. I mean, you're getting a really good football player in Brandon Ayuk. And again, that has to be under consideration. You know what you're getting in a guy, right? It may not live up to it. You knew what you were getting in Calvin Ridley. It didn't live up to the preseason promise, and I understand he had a year and a half off. I still thought he underachieved. I thought he picked up a lot of garbage yards where games were already in doubt and, frankly, didn't make the big plays that we were expecting all season long. Next year's first is what's really interesting because, I mean, if they're at 17 again, that's exactly where you don't want to be. You're not going to get better if you're in the middle of the pack, right? It's one of two things. You're either awful and you get the top pick, as Jacksonville did in consecutive years, or you become a much better football team and the end result is you're drafting 27th, like they did last year with Anton Harrison. I would tend to believe that Jacksonville is in a much better situation of drafting at 27 than number one, obviously. But boy, that's giving up a lot. Plus to re-sign the guy. So you're giving up two future picks. And again, you're going to have to pay him $100-plus million in order to make that move. 0924 says, "Bull, I hope Trevor will sign with us. Our leadership is destroying him." Interesting. Who's destroying him? The Urban thing's gone. I think the relationship with Peterson is strong. The whispers with press are whispers. I've never had anyone approach me that I know is in the inside of this who's been, "Hey, Ballou, Trevor's not a fan of Press Taylor." Okay. Now, I've heard it, and I'm sure you've heard it, but I also hear a ton of things. It hasn't been someone that I think is so incredibly credible that even if it was told to me off the record, I would take that and say, "Yeah, wow. I mean, that really is a situation." I don't know if it is. When you lose, all sorts of fingers start to point in different directions, right? I'm not saying that's the case. I'm also not saying it's not the case, if that makes any sense. Let's play that real quick before we get to the top of the hour. We're going to switch things up here for a little bit on from the Jaguars slide on over to some college football with Zach Goodall. But, you know, everything with Trevor, yeah, calling plays is a big deal. But right now for him, the most important aspect of everything is his health after five injuries a year ago. Trevor Lawrence yesterday was asked, "How are you feeling?"
It took a while. I mean, I'd probably say March. You know, when March hit, I felt really good, like lifting and doing everything like totally normal. You know, I'd been so used to the back half of the season adjusting everything, whether it was workout or throwing or practice or whatever it was. You know, I gave myself, I would work out but still modified. But until March, I'd say that's when I started to feel like 100% do the stuff that I normally do and can kind of get back in the kind of shape I want to be and train the way I wanted to. So, yeah, it took a little while.
There's been noticeable weight gain for Trevor Lawrence since he got here. I think it's good weight. You know, he could still move. I think that that's still at times maybe lost in his arsenal. And, you know, the other side of that is get down, right? Stop trying to make plays, especially when you're down by, what, 3 scores against Tampa and you take a shot, you know, at, on the sideline where you have no chance of coming back. I mean, yeah, he's a competitor. He's trying to make plays, right? But that's where the smarter sense of things have got to come into play, and you hope that his maturation takes over. He's been told that by them all. I think when push comes to shove, again, he's trying to make a play. That's what he's trying to do, trying to make a play. But he's got to be smarter, and he's got to stay healthy. Those are two huge parts of things for this organization, if they're able to turn it around in 1 year. Yeah, the OTA is officially underway. If you have not heard, that began on Monday. So this is, what, day three of OTAs. Or actually, it was day two of OTAs. And the way things are now, we meet with Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson tomorrow, 1 week away from the NFL draft. Next week is the first round, right? We know first round on Thursday, a couple of rounds on Friday. It'll conclude on Saturday. After that, you get a couple of weeks. And then it's Sunday, May 12th, and Monday, May 13th, you get the 2-day rookie minicamp. And they're just out there with helmets and jerseys on, shorts on. You know, no pads, no hitting. They'll have their entire draft class in. They'll have some undrafted free agents in who they've already signed. And they'll also have plenty of street free agents. I mean, you typically have a pretty long list of guys out there, somewhere in the neighborhood of, 40 to 50 or so who will be there. And, you know, 25 of them are street free agents. You're going to draft, what, 8 or 9 players, bring in some rookies who you prioritize, you know, maybe pay them a tiny bit more to get them to come here to Jacksonville. Certainly if it's for a positional group where you think maybe you have an opportunity as an undrafted rookie right out of the gate to at least make the practice squad in year one. So that's what's up. And then after that, you have OTAs the 22nd and 23rd of May, May 25th, then May 30th and 31st, and then June 2nd, 5th, and 8th. Mandatory minicamp June 12th, 13th, and 14th. After that, it's over. And again, I'm one of those who's like, just let's slow down. I mean, we're already a week away from the draft. That's just absolutely nuts. And when the draft wraps up, basically April is up. And then in the month of May, you got the rookie minicamp and you got 3 different OTA sessions. And then you have mandatory minicamp in mid-June. You basically have 5 weeks after June 14th until things crank up, whether it's the SEC meetings, whether it's the ACC meetings, and obviously Jaguars training camp over at the Miller Electric Center. I mean, in my world, that's like way, way, way too fast. It feels like it should still be February, right? Maybe March. We're already past the midway point of April. Absolutely insane. I mean, that, just slow it down a little bit. But, you know, others, obviously, you want football to be back here tomorrow. It's not the case. Not going to be the case. But it's going to get here. That I can promise you. I don't think I know anyone who tells me, man, it's been a long day. Things are really slow. I mean, when's the last time that I've heard that? I can't even remember. It's the exact opposite. The time just keeps getting faster year by year. All right, Zach Goodall's coming up. He's coming back home here to Jacksonville. He's got new responsibilities. He'll be covering the Jaguars. I've talked with Zach forever. Of course, recently he's been covering the Florida Gators and have Zach on quite a bit to give us the very latest on Florida. He's going to do that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. He did take in the spring game, so we'll get everything from Zach Goodall and the Florida Gators, who wrapped up their spring, and also have Zach tell us what he's going to be doing here in town when it gets back to covering the Jaguars. So let's get ready for our second hour, 641-1010. If you'd like to join us, that is the text line. It's brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
About a few minutes past 7 o'clock with you tonight till 8. Tomorrow, very busy. Trent Baalke, excuse me, Doug Peterson at 2 o'clock. So it'll be their yearly 1 week away local press conference to talk about the NFL draft. I'm fired up for it. Will we get anything at all from Balke or Peterson? Again, I think they've been, as of late, certainly been telling us more as opposed to less. I think it's been pretty enjoyable, particularly at the Combine and the season-ending press conference, both for Peterson and then, what, it took 18 days for Trent Balke to actually get with us. Zach Goodall is making his way back to Duval as well. Of course, recently he has been covering the University of Florida, has been covering their football program, and they just wrapped up, so we want to get the very latest from Zach, who joins Rick Ballew. Zach, congratulations on the new gig.
Appreciate it, Rick, and I'm excited to be back in Jacksonville and excited to be back on your airwaves.
Yeah, it's good. It's good, and you picked a great time to get over here. It should be a very interesting year. So tell us about your new role. What are you going to be doing here back in Duval?
Yeah, I will be the managing editor of the Jaguars Wire. I'm taking over for Adam Stites. Know him from back in my Big Cat Country days. John Shipley helped me out as well. He's over at Jaguar Wire. He kind of linked me and Adam up, and it was kind of perfect timing. I was choosing to step away from SI and covering the Gators at that point, trying to figure out what was next, and it must have been the next day that I heard John and Adam. It couldn't have been better.
Wow. Things so they worked out perfectly for you. I know you enjoyed it back over there in Gainesville, but you'll be coming back here to cover the NFL. All right, so when do I've seen a couple of tweets on this, but when will things officially kick off with you at Jaguars Wire?
So I've kind of done like a soft launch thing here. I've started posting a couple stories just to get a feel for it, but my official starting day is Monday, so literal perfect timing.
All right, we'll look for that. Zach Goodall back here on the beat in Jacksonville, taking over as the editor for Jaguars Wire. Let's go back to the weekend. Let's spend a couple of minutes on the Gators, who wrapped up their spring, and I guess I got to go straight to the quarterback. DJ Lagway, you know, did some really good things. We all understand this is Graham Mertz's team, but what were your early impressions and what you were able to see during this spring with Lagway?
I was certainly impressed in the orange and blue game with Lagway. Kind of knew coming in, even though he was as impressive physically and athletically as any quarterback in the class, and up there with all of them. Really, in recent classes. But you knew there was going to be some mechanical work and some playing speed, processing speed, things that he needed to catch up on. And that was evident throughout the early days of camp. There were words and murmurs of quite a few picks being thrown. And to be frank, Graham Mertz wasn't necessarily innocent in that either. But It seemed to come along as camp went on. And we certainly saw in the game, it was pretty clean football from Lagway. He had a couple of misses, I think, on his first drive, and then was pretty perfect from that point on. So it was a great first showing, and I think it's exactly what Florida fans needed, as they've been really looking to get some sort of consistent game changer out of the quarterback position, going back to Kyle Trask.
You know, it's really interesting because the way things are today in college football, Zach, I mean, redshirting someone is pointless. I was really blown away by how Texas kind of used the whole situation with Manning Ewers, just my opinion on it. But Lagway's not your starter, but don't you have to play him because of, you know, the way that football is today, whether you're up by a lot or you're down by a lot, or even if it is a one or two possession game, don't you sense that Lagway plays some this year?
Yeah, for a multitude of factors, including, like you said, just the way the game is today. Like, these quarterbacks tend to not come in and sit. I remember running the numbers back on it, and I think class of 23, at least half of them did not redshirt the year. So they were out there and they were getting reps. And with the transfer portal being prevalent, it's obviously important. And again, fans want to see the future. But I also view it as, I think Lagway expects to play. He knows how talented he is, and he knows, quite frankly, just how valuable he is to this team long term. Not even just coming in and being a good quarterback, but the value he brings to this rebuild Billy Napier is doing. And as a result, he's going to expect to be in packages. And if he's ready to play, if he and the coaching staff are confident that he can make things happen, it would be unwise of them, I think, to let that sit on the bench.
Talking with Zach Goodall as he gets ready to wrap up his career over in Gainesville, and he did so with the spring game at Florida this past weekend. Zach makes his return trip here next week back to Duval as the editor of Jaguars Wire. Obviously, you're very familiar with one of the biggest, I would say, you know, the biggest or the thing that you would compare most between the Jaguars and the Gators right now is who's calling plays and is the right man calling plays. A lot of controversy here about whether or not Doug Peterson is going to take over that again this season. What about in Gainesville? I know Billy Napier said all the right things, that he still believes he's the guy for the job. What's your understanding with that particular position this year?
Yeah, it's funny you mention it. Literally earlier today, I was talking to a friend about how I can't avoid a clean offensive coordinator scenario anymore. But I get the feeling that it is going to be Billy Napier doing it. Matter of fact, I think he did a show with Josh Pate from 247 Sports today, maybe even saying that he thinks he plans to continue doing it. But that's been my read most of the time. They've been non-committal about this promotion they gave Russ Callaway, even though he's got more responsibilities coming. Billy Napier is a guy that loves continuity. He really believes in the system he's got, and he's always believed in himself as a coordinator going back to the Clemson days. Even when he was let go by the Tigers, he rebounded and was able to get coordinator jobs and thought that he was the guy for that job. He certainly seems to feel that way now, and I think he is really leaning into what he was able to do with Graham Mertz last year. He went away from his typical system of wanting to be run dominant, really turned Graham Mertz's career around compared to the expectations coming in, and that, for right or wrong, it seems to be his belief that he's got that part under control.
Tell me about the running game, because, you know, ETN goes to Georgia. You got four or five quality backs. I've heard some good things about this big freshman power back, Jaden Bobb. What's the latest there?
Yeah, it's certainly an intriguing room, and I do think it's going to miss Trevor Etienne. I mean, when he came in, he was undoubtedly – he offered something different to the offense in both of his 2 years with the team, including right out of the gate, just a different kind of agility, explosiveness. They could rely on him for a big play when they needed it. But if anyone running back in that room right now looks like it's the next closest thing, it is Jaden Baugh, exactly. And it seems a bit weird. Trevor Etienne was a good 5'7", 5'8", 215, 220 pounds, so a bigger but very small back. Jaden Baugh is a legitimate 6'1", 6'2", listed, I think, between 235 to 242 on a given day. So totally different looking kind of back, and he can hit you with power, and he's certainly strong and explosive. But
who is he? Who does he remind you of? I hate to put you on the spot, but give us a guy.
So someone I was talking to the other day about it, and I don't know if it's a perfect comp, but from the size, skill set, box, my first thought was TJ Yeldon, former Jags back, but more so thinking about his Alabama time. Bigger guy, wide receiver kind of skill set as well. He spent, I think, 3 years at receiver in high school, actually. So he's got it kind of all figured out. He can do a lot of different things for the offense, and I'm sure there's still a development track there, especially since he spent so much time at receiver compared to running back in high school, but the talent's there, undoubtedly.
As we wrap things up, I heard some good things about Aiden Mizell as well. Did anyone else catch your eye throughout the spring session over there at the University of Florida?
Yeah, I mean, at receiver, to me, it was Mizell and, of course, Trey Wilson. I'm expecting huge things for Wilson entering his sophomore year after what he was able to do in the offense. And his numbers were nice for a freshman. They weren't necessarily a Calvin Ridley freshman in Alabama type of numbers with 1,000 yards receiving, but it was what he was able to do within the role, not even with the ball in his hand. Or when the ball was put in his hand, sometimes it would be done. Often it would be done behind the line of scrimmage, and he would turn something out of nothing. And I think it was honestly extremely polished ball for a player who didn't even participate in spring camp. So with a full camp underneath him now, obviously NFL training from his father and feel for the offense, a lot of development in college, obviously, I'm thinking that this could be a big season for Eugene Wilson.
Last question. How active do you believe attrition will be over the next 13 days at Florida, guys leaving, guys being added via the transfer portal?
I think we'll see a decent bit. They were at least one, I believe, maybe two players over the scholarship limit entering the spring period. So players, they're going to have to go anyway. And I believe the first one left yesterday in Manny Nunnery, the linebacker, as they lean into more youth in that room. I would expect another couple. I think they're going to be active in trying to upgrade a few spots. I know we just talked about a couple of nice receivers, but that's one that I think will be near the top of their board. They'll probably want to add another outside experienced receiver who can separate. Cornerback is another position that I could see maybe an injection of experience at, and you can never have enough linemen. I wouldn't be surprised if they make their calls on both sides of the ball there.
Yeah. Very intriguing. Zach Goodall's making his way back here. Yes, he is taking over as the editor of Jaguars Wire, completes his work at the in Gainesville covering the Florida Gators, and we appreciate his report on what just did happen during the spring. Zach, look forward to seeing when you get back here in the town. We'll catch up soon. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Rick. I will be there tomorrow for the press conferences.
Sounds good. There. I'll see you then. All right, there he goes. Goodbye to Zach Goodall. Actually, welcome back to Zach Goodall. Really happy about him. I always appreciated his work. And, I didn't love it when he left, because I thought he was doing a nice job here with Big Cat Country, but it was a better opportunity for him to go back and cover college ball at Florida. And you just heard him say, things just wrapped up. He'll be here tomorrow and start next week as the editor of Jaguars Wire. Saturday, August 31st, Miami at Florida. I mean, this is what it's all about. What a lid lifter there. Saturday, August 31st. This is a brutal schedule for Florida. And it's been talked about, and it deserves to be talked about. I mean, just look at this schedule. Miami at home, Samford at home, Texas A&M at home. So you have, three games in the sun. That won't have any bearing on Miami, obviously. But with Samford and Texas A&M, you got three games in a row right there. In the swamp. You go to Mississippi State early, which is a huge game. I mean, that's one Florida's got to win. Look at their road games this year. At Tennessee, at Texas, here with Georgia, and at Florida State. What a brutal road schedule. So you got to get that one at Mississippi State. You can knock it down right now. I don't care where Tennessee and Florida play. Okay, Florida beats them. Florida owns Tennessee. Tennessee is such a college football embarrassment for a school that likes to say that they are a blue blood. You can't be a blue blood if you're like 2-40 in your last 42 against Florida and Alabama combined. It is atrocious. Just look up those records. And you know what's so funny about it, regardless of if you're a Florida State fan or a Miami fan, or a Florida fan, and we get that Florida doesn't play Miami regularly. But if you were to look at Florida State-Miami, if you look at Florida State-Florida and track the last 5 years, the last 10 years, the last 20 years, okay, there's peaks and valleys, but it's pretty even. You know what I mean? It's pretty close to, it may be 11-9, or it may be, 11-8 in the last night. But it's not like what Tennessee has done with Alabama and what Tennessee has done with Florida. It's absolutely scary. So at Mississippi State for Florida, home with UCF, which is interesting that they're bringing them in. This feels like they didn't play South Florida, Central Florida as much as I want to say Florida State has or Miami has. I may be wrong with that, but it just kind of feels that way. At Tennessee, home with Kentucky. Matchup here, world's largest outdoor cocktail party at Texas. How weird is that? Florida at Texas. Florida State goes to SMU this year as well. I mean, you'd have to really look back. When's the last time Florida played in Austin, if ever? When's the last time Florida State played in Dallas? Non-Cotton Bowl, right? And actually, I went to a game in Dallas there. Oh, heck. Was that Oklahoma State? 10 years ago? It was, to open up that college football season in Jerry's World. That was a Jameis Winston-led team. Florida State, Oklahoma State. I want to say that was Tyreek Hill for Oklahoma State, if memory serves me correct. So at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State. That is nuts. That is absolutely nuts. Wow. I mean, that's a 4-8 season. That's a 5-7 season. You got to win that game against Miami. You got to win that game against Mississippi State. You got to win some of those early ones. It's going to be a very intriguing season in the world of college football. All right, let me come back a little bit more on some college ball and the Canes and the Noles. We're going to make our way towards that. Have something as well that brings us back to golf that I think you will find very interesting. And, yes, let's grab more from you. A lot of reaction coming in tonight on the text line, on everything that we talked about as far as Jacksonville. The best way to get on in, 641-1010. That's the number, and it's brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, I've always liked big backs. I have, especially in college football. And it can be an interesting year in this state. We just talked with Zach Goodall. And, of course, the cupboard is full at Florida. You're aware of that, even though they got the incoming freshman, Jaden Boss, 6'1", 235. Big back. Miami, it was announced yesterday that Henry Parrish Jr. is leaving the team. He's led the U in rushing the last couple of years. You know, Donald Chaney announced that he was joining Louisville back in December. Louisville had an outstanding transfer portal class. It was the best in America. And they brought in 20-plus players from all over. I'm a big fan at the U, and I know, you know, we talked about this quite a bit this past year, JJ. I like Mark Fletcher, right? He's a 6'2", 225 guy, but it just seems like there were patterns this year. There were times where either he was not playing, or if he wasn't playing, he wasn't getting the ball. And I understand Miami did have three guys that could really lean on, but out of the two who left, I'd be happiest knowing that Mark Fletcher's still there.
Yeah, Fletcher was original. Like, the other guys came in as transfers. Well, Parrish did. He announced like a month ago he was leaving. Fletcher was hurt last year to end the season. Well, you probably didn't see a lot of him. But, yeah, he's much better, younger. You know, running backs, you can plug anybody in there. So I was never worried when I saw Parrish hit the portal. They should be all right.
So, obviously, a great opportunity for Mark Fletcher, if he's healthy, to be the go-to guy. Boz got some work to do. He's down on that depth chart right now at the University of Florida. And then you look at Florida State. You know, they got a big back and an incoming kid out of Albany, Georgia, in Cam Davis. I mean, he's a legit 5'10", 5'10 and a half, 220, 225-pound true freshman running back. You know, and a guy that was really hurt last year. I want to say he only played three games. So he is busting his way back into things. And, again, Florida State, with Benson going pro and with the transfer portal being very active at running back all of a sudden, yeah, there's opportunities for carries at Florida State. And Cam Davis could end up getting them. That'll be interesting. You know, the other news today with FSU, minor injuries, Brock Glenn and Luke Kromenhock. Both out for the remainder of the year. Okay, there's only a couple of days left in the spring game coming up on Saturday. I guess it's nothing to be overly concerned about. They're considered minor injuries. Just fix it, you know, whether it's rest, whether it's treatment. I don't know if any surgery. I don't even know what part of the body is banged up at this particular time. But, man, I hate hearing the backup quarterbacks. Both of them are injured. I mean, DJ Uiagalelei, you're going to go through that this year. But you saw, I mean, it's tough to complain when you win. And Florida State had that very lengthy win streak, and it was very impressive. But they weren't able to put guys away. They weren't able to put teams away. And when you're not able to put teams away, you're not able to build depth. Right? I mean, you can at some positions, but obviously here I'm talking about quarterback, right? Jordan Travis played every game. And the only reason that, you know, Glenn came in and Tate Rodemaker came in and what have you is because you had the injury. You would love to be able to see Florida State go with DJU. Can they pull ahead? Can they win some games this year where all of a sudden, yeah, you're battling to find out who the backup quarterback is and they're going to get significant playing time at some points this year? You hope that that's the case. You hope you're so good that you're able to do that. So when they're thrown in there, it doesn't look like it did last year against Florida or last year against Georgia, right? It was brutal at the quarterback position. So a little bit of a setback there quarterback-wise. And you know, the other part of this with Florida State, they have another 13, 14 days now until the end of the month. They have to get under the 85 scholarship limit. Right now they sit at 89. Again, there's a lot of rumors with attrition at Florida State, so you're going to see some guys coming and going. What's lost in all this is my understanding is that Florida State would still like to add a couple of players. Well, in order to add a few more guys, you're going to have to say goodbye to, you know, probably 5 to 7 players, and they still are up against a loss of 5 scholarships for this year and next year combined. So they may want to go 85 to 82 this year and 85 to 83 next year. So that's going to happen. I think a couple of those fifth-year wide receivers are going to go. I think that one right off the, is the most obvious position, whether it's a Portier or a Spahn or whomever. I would expect a couple of those fifth-year seniors to open things up a little bit. I could see an offensive lineman leaving. Okay, I can maybe see someone from the defensive backfield leaving, although Greedy Vance made that announcement last week. I didn't like that. I thought Greedy Vance is a guy that has experience. He did some nice things at Florida State. He was never a star, but he did some pretty good things. And, you know, all of a sudden, he's going to move on. He's an opportunity to perhaps get more playing time. So we'll see what ends up happening. Hey, this real quick as well. You know, Florida State lost their three offensive linemen. They lost their starting tight end, as we know, Jaheim Bell. But you look at production, their top back, their top two wide receivers, their tight end, their two linebackers, three defensive tackles. Right? Or two defensive tackles, one pass rush defensive end. Several guys out on the island. If you look at Renardo Green, you look at Jerrion Jones, you look at a safety, Akeem Dent, man, they're just losing position guys all over. Tons of production. Brugler, in his latest mock draft, this is where he's got Florida State players going. Jared Verse, first round Rams. Keon Coleman, second round Chargers. Braden Fisk, second round, Lions. Trey Benson, third round, Giants. Renardo Green going pick number 144 overall to the Jaguars. All right. Johnny Wilson and Fabian Lovett going picks number 145 and 147, respectively, to the Broncos. Jaheim Bell, 182. Jerrion Jones, 190. And Jordan Travis, 192. Noticeably absent here, Akeem Dent and both linebackers, right? Kalen DeLoach and Tatum Bethune, both, all three, not draftable according to this particular list. That mean they may not go in a sixth or seventh round. This isn't the gospel, but boy, I thought as many as 12 guys could go this year for FSU. They got 10 in the first 192 picks. So we'll see what ends up happening, as you are aware of, the NFL draft is a week away from tomorrow. And we will visit with Trent Baalke tomorrow. We will visit as well with Doug Peterson tomorrow. So fired up about tomorrow night's show. We should have a ton of information, and perhaps we can maybe even guess a little bit as to what we believe the Jaguars are going to do in just 1 week. All right, we got much more to do. Take you up till 8 o'clock tonight, and then again it will be Hacker Nation who will join you then. Remember, tomorrow night, it's going to be fun, 6 to 8, after getting an opportunity to talk to the Jaguars brass. That'll be the case as well on Friday with you here from 6 until 8.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Brando Chambly has gone rogue, and it's just awesome. Okay? We need more of him. He's got that hair that does like the wavy thing. It really bounces and behaves, but he gets so after it. You know, it's like you hear the name Brandel Chambly, and you're thinking silver spoon, never has been punched in the face. I don't know. Chambly's got a little Johnny Miller in him. He backs it up. with facts, but he won't let it go with the LIV. He's like the number one anti-LIV guy, more than Rory, more than Tiger, more than anyone else. Shambly really takes this personally. He put this out on Twitter and or X. You think they got paid $3 billion for a few top 10s and a plus 82 as a group at a major. A senior citizen beat some of their stars. And almost all of the game of LIV players have deteriorated since they sold their souls to the Saudis. All right. That's wrong. Okay. I mean, some players in the LIV played very well and ended up in the top 10. Plus 82. All right. You're taking all 13 golfers. Some really did struggle, many of which are former Masters champions who are still of a big name. And that is why they were actually in this event. If it was to take accurate world rankings, which no longer apply because of the LIV and they only play 54 holes, then you would see where, in fact, they are ranking-wise. The bottom line is this. Golf will kind of go away here now for about a month. You'll hear very little about it unless something huge happens, like, you know, rumors of Rory McIlroy. Has he been offered $850 million to join the LIV? That would become a blockbuster story. But things will taper off just a little bit until the PGA Championship, which is coming up in May. The problem that this tour has right now is the lack of star power that is actually in it and still very prevalent in the LIV Tour. And this is becoming the number one conversation piece. Regular events in the PGA Tour, again, ratings way down. The LIV ratings are not really good at all. You have to go look for it. What is it, on the CW? Or I'm not even sure where you can find the LIV. Are they going to be able to come together and do what they did last week, right? I mean, the four majors are different, as we know. Different rules. It's an invite. It was at the event at the Masters. There were special invites for a few players. Obviously, you have to qualify for events, particularly both Opens, and different rules for both the United States Open as well as the British Open and next month's PGA Championship. But the understanding is that all three of them will, again, bring in the higher-ranked players from the LIV. We heard that something was going to happen. It just feels like more and more time is going by, and it's really hurting this sport with the lack of star power. So hopefully that'll happen sooner as opposed to later. All right, 1939. Believe it makes more sense to move up and get a wide receiver in the first round than it does to pay a veteran, although the last draft was supposedly stacked. And wide receiver, we ended up getting Laviska Shenault, just saying. Well, you kind of answered your own question. All right, you said it makes more sense to move up and get a wide receiver in the first round. All right, so you're going to package a few picks. Can you get up into the top eight or nine to get one of those three wide receivers that are expected to go in the top 10? I think the asking price is too much. And you don't know. You just said it with Laviska Shenault, although he was a third-round draft pick in a very strong wide receiver class, right? When he was selected in the third round, I'd have to look back on it, but I'm guessing there were 10 to 12 wide receivers who had already been selected before Shenault was gobbled up by the Jaguars. If you make a move for a player the quality of Brandon Ayuk, again, you know what you have. You have a tested man who has produced an awful lot in this league. You're never going to have that when you go out and make a draft selection. You just don't know. And that's the crazy part of it. Again, free agency, you know. You know what you're paying for. You can forecast the production. Yeah, you wonder after getting a bag, will their effort wane a little bit? I mean, this organization forever brought in some high-priced free agents that, for the better part of it, their careers were over, right? Hugh Douglas, Carnell Lake, Bryce Popp. Why was Bryce Popp so good? I'll tell you why Bryce Popp was so good. He played on the other side of Bruce Smith and Reggie White. You think that might have had a little something to do with it? So, you don't know, but certainly with the NFL draft, that becomes a part of it as well. Baloo, did you 52-62? Did you see Keith Richards looking back at you this morning in your bathroom mirror? I think so. Perhaps after the Pink Floyd show last night, it did get a little bit crazy. But it was a great time and saw a ton of 1010 XL listeners. No doubt about that. Fun show. Blue, sounds like Trevor is taking a page from TB12 regimen. You know, the way that he discusses his body, I hope it works for him. Tom Brady stayed incredibly healthy. And they took it personally, that offensive line, which changed time and again during his 6 Super Bowl wins with Bill Belichick, right? They took it personally that if you touch my quarterback, something's going to happen. Brady had that pedigree as the greatest player to ever play the game. He had that leadership. He had the ability to get in someone's face and scream. And that's different from what we have here with Trevor Lawrence. Although I sense that it's starting to get more and more of Trevor really becoming a leader, right? We've seen that in 3 years grow. It's certainly more now than when he got here. All right, because that to me was one of the biggest issues I had. Is he a born leader? Never really saw the fire in his belly at Clemson and haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of it here in Jacksonville. But we have to remember, he's only a 24-year-old kid. This will be year 4. We're going to get more and more. Hey, JJ, you see that story that came out today on Belichick with Robert Kraft, who owns the Patriots, apparently telling Arthur Blank not to hire Bill Belichick, that quote-unquote, you cannot trust him.
Yeah, I saw that he wasn't great about him after he left. I think Robert Kraft's had a rough like few months with the documentary, and he's just out of it, man. I guess you don't want the guy to leave there and then instantly win in Atlanta and make you look like a fool as the Pats continue to lose. So maybe you just, you know, spread a little bit of disinformation or something. If you're Arthur Blank, though, who cares what he says? Like, he's the greatest coach of all time. I don't even remember who they hired.
Yeah, it was when they Jared Mayo?
No, I'm talking about Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
What a dumbass hire by the Patriots. I'm sure that'll work out.
What's amazing about this is I guess it just couldn't end without there being a bunch of nonsense, right? It's like Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones. It's like Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner 6 times. You just knew at the end that there was going to be some crap that came out. But what is it about ownership in Boston, okay? The Red Sox went 86 years without winning a World Series. They finally got it done in 2004 and won again in 2007 with Terry Francona, who, in my opinion, is the greatest manager in the history of the Boston Red Sox. And what did the ownership group do? They came out with this bogus, uncalled-for story on Tito. And Dan Shaughnessy's book on Francona is spectacular. It really is. It's a very good baseball read for those of you. I think it's one of the better baseball books that I've read recently. But you outed this man for painkiller medicine and his addiction. After the players loved him, he won 2 World Series for that fan base. And that's the way that you treated this guy, by outing him like that. Same now for Robert Kraft. How in the hell did this story ever get out? The Patriots were a joke franchise. I grew up with them. My dad took me to season ticket. I went all the time as a kid. They've always been number 4 in Boston, way behind the Red Sox, way behind the Bruins, and behind the South. And you win 6 Super Bowls? And you out this man? Like this, don't understand it. Very disappointed by it. And, you know, Robert Kraft to me looks punch drunk. I don't even know how to describe him.
I'll give you
slowing
a
down a little bit.
Biden-esque.
Okay. There you go. So that's pretty interesting that came out today. Also, a fascinating article from Dan Pompey, who I used to work with. He was a scribe, a columnist with the Sporting News, and I believe he's still based out of Chicago. But he has interviewed now a bunch of these front office types, and the marks that are coming in now on Caleb Williams are really staggering. We had Denny Thompson on yesterday, and Denny's been working with him. He's been working with Jordan Travis, and you know Denny was gushing about him yesterday as a guy that can basically make all the plays. And he is going to be the first pick in the draft. But there were six different front office types who, four of the six, had him ranked as the sixth best quarterback prospect. Okay? Not the top overall. Six out of six. I mean, you're talking about Caleb Williams being behind Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, and Michael Penix Jr. Six out of six, and they're really concerned about his measurables, okay? They're also concerned about how mentally tough is this guy. You know, crying with his mother in the stands offended a lot of people. Him being shown recently, I think, what was it? The combination of pink lipstick, pink fingernail painting on his nails, and a pink cellular telephone.
The Holy Trinity.
Really fired people up. You know, just imagine for 2 seconds that Trevor wasn't here, and this was 3 years ago, and you had the top pick in the draft. This is the ultimate macho gladiator team sport. You're going to hire a guy who's got a pink cell phone. All right, are you going to bring in a guy to lead this organization that has pink lipstick on? I don't know, unless he's trying to be Ziggy Stardust or unless he's trying to be, I don't know, who else dress up like that? Lou Reed, right?
Mariah Carey.
Kiss. Kiss did it a little bit.
Madonna.
Yeah,
Lady Gaga. Taylor Swift.
What do you make of that? What do you make of all that? Is that nothing? Or I mean,
I don't know.
Public.
I just don't think he'll be like all that based on his playing style. And it's the Bears, and we just don't see number one overall picks live up to the hype. So just like without the pink and the feminine stuff, I would say he's not going to be a great quarterback in the NFL, regardless. But this doesn't help. I mean, everyone online, you know, Twitter, they have to defend him, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is a generational thing. You just wouldn't understand. Like, well, how come I live in Jacksonville and I don't see 20-somethings everywhere with lip gloss on?
Yeah. I may try.
And their nails painted. Yeah, tomorrow night. Tune in, YouTube.
Yeah. Maybe I'll wear it tomorrow for the presser when I ask Trent Baalke a question.
Please.
Huh?
Please do
with the,
that.
With the and again, let's just be honest about it. Publicly and privately is going to be two different things. Publicly, you're not going to hear anyone put their name on.
Exactly.
You're not going to hear it. Privately, though, it's a conversation. Now, maybe he's just having a blast. Maybe he's just fooling around. I don't know. Maybe he did it because he wanted to send a message. I don't know. I didn't really dive into it enough, but apparently it's got NFL types really questioning whether or not they are going to make this selection.
But if you're the Bears, I mean, you have no choice. I don't know what he could wear at this point that would make you not draft him number one overall. Like with those other quarterbacks, they just don't have the rating, the hype, the ceiling as him.
No.
So you're just going to do it.
We'll see. Hey, one other note to that reason why Braves Belichick, he's been hired by Omaha Productions.
Yes.
So they like signed a 9-year contract extension, which I guess is Manning Cast, Monday Night Football, maybe some podcasts and some other stuff. So no role has been announced yet for Bill Belichick.
Well, they announced it today. He's doing the draft with who's the afternoon guy that wears the tank top on ESPN?
Fitzy?
No.
Pat Fitzgerald?
No. Pat
McAfee.
Pat McAfee. Pat Fitzgerald's the guy who just got canned, right?
Pat Fitzgerald's the guy that at Northwestern.
Yeah, Pat McAfee.
Okay, and Belichick.
And Belichick doing the draft together.
Is Belichick going to be in a tank top?
I hope so. I've seen him shirtless before, and it's not a great sight.
Hey, folks, tomorrow's going to be a blast. Absolutely. All right, Trent Baalke, Doug Peterson. We'll talk with them at 2. Have a full report tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. On the very latest with the Jaguars. Thank you to Zach Goodall for joining us. Thank you to our producer. He is J.J. LaSalva. My name is Rick Ballew. I don't check the text line now if the show is over. You can always get me on Twitter. That's Ballew1010XL. Hackers up next. Have a great night. I'll talk with you tomorrow at 6.